What's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in to the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. In this episode, we talk with tournament angler and guide Sean Coffey. Sean tells us some of his best guiding stories. We talk about big swim baits, first jobs, screwing your boat to your trailer bunks, and rubbing sunscreen on your baits. We hope you guys enjoy. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the Angler's Happy Hour podcast. Today, we've got a cool guest. We say all our guests are cool, but this guest is really, really cool.
Special.
His name is Sean Coffey. Introduced him a minute ago in the intro, but Sean's a good friend of ours. He's a heck of a fisherman, tournament fisherman guide, and happy to have you here, dude. What's going on?
Not too much, man. Just hanging out, trying to catch a bass. It's tough out here right now, for sure.
It is. January fishing, man, and we've been talking about it on here, and we're kind of the Debbie Downer January fishing podcast, but spring's coming soon.
It is, man, and I think, like we've talked about, all our lakes are coming up. I think they're coming up a little bit faster than normal, like we've talked about, for the winter, so it's already peaking up quick in the middle of the winter, so these fish aren't really chasing it for the springtime right now. So I think that's what's got them a little funky right now, but I still think it's going to set up good for the spring.
Cool. Right on. I'm with you, dude. They're going to be hungry when the spring rolls around. You know, they're making us, we're giving us fits right now, but it'll be good.
You know, we got to be close, man. You look outside and it's 71 degrees, sunny, it's nice and warm. We've had a stretch there where it wasn't very warm. Now we've got it. So hopefully it's just around the corner.
Yeah. You'd think we'd learn. I mean, all I ever do is complain from January till March 1st, how bad fishing is. And it is what it is.
Eternal pessimists, right? That's how we like to be known.
Yep.
Always really. Looking for excuses.
Exactly.
We've got a lot of excuses on the fishing side. But we did an episode like maybe a month and a half ago with our buddy Scooter, and we told a lot of guide stories. And Sean, with the amount of guiding you do, you guide with Scooter and myself and Rob and Nick, and we thought this might be fun to do kind of like a guide stories 2.0. Also mix in some fishing stuff. We're going to talk about some tournament fishing as well. But I think we had so much fun doing the guide stories last time. We're going to do it again.
That's cool, man. Yeah, there's definitely some really cool stories out there. And you come across some really cool people and the ways you catch them. I've learned a lot just from the way you catch them. I mean, patience for one. I mean, you can sit in one area. And I never would sit in a spot for that long, you know. But just because you got people, you're dealing with line or whatever you're doing, then all of a sudden the fish start biting and you're thinking to yourself, well, if I would have left about 15, 20 minutes ago, I never would have caught these fish. So it's telling me to like be a little bit more patient, but come across some really cool people. I actually take out a blind guy, and you're talking about the senses that come through a fishing rod. That guy's hands and the feeling is just incredible. You know what I mean?
Didn't even
need to see what he was doing because everything was so sensitive through his hands.
Huh.
Guy ended up slaying him.
Wow.
Had he fished much before that?
He had. He had been fishing before that, but he was just telling me, you know, I was like, man, and he was like, you're actually really good at this, you know? And he was just telling me, he's like, hey, how far is the bank? I was like, no, it's a good long cast. Don't worry about it. You're good there. And he's like, oh, I feel the rocks, you know? I'm like, dude, you're doing it. You're right in the right spot. And sure enough, got one.
Awesome.
Freaking pretty cool.
Yeah,
man.
That is super cool. You wonder, too, like, he probably has a great support cast around him, taking him out fishing, helping him out. I mean, that's super cool.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, it was a neat experience, and you know, it takes you back, makes you think about what you actually have and what people deal with too. So, really cool to take him out, man. I was fortunate for that, and we ended up having a good day and slayed him.
Nice. Yeah, you know, guiding and being a fishing guide, it always is an interesting job because not only do you have to have knowledge of, you know, what the fish are doing and how to get people on them, and then mixing in the factor of what their abilities are and whether they're, you know, more experienced or less experienced. I always thought the psychological aspect of it was pretty funny too, right? You mentioned, you know, those slow periods or messing around and that allowing the fish maybe to come onto a more active period. And the times that I've guided, that was a little bit of anxiety, but it was also really cool, right? Because you're getting to know people, you're hearing some stories, or, you know, you got to warm that up a little bit. And that's part of the guiding experience too, that is fun and rewarding on both sides as the client and the guide. You have a 4 or 8 hours to just get to know somebody. It's pretty cool.
No doubt.
These are people that you would never be in the boat with, you know, and you know, never spend 4 or 8 hours with in any other circumstance. So it's cool. I mean, yeah. It definitely sharpens you on both sides there. So before we go too deep into the guiding, we've got some good stories coming up, but I want to talk a little bit about how we know Sean and some of our history fishing with Sean. Sean and I actually met when we were like, I think I was maybe 16 and Sean was 14. How old are you now?
28.
So yeah, I'm 31. So we're close in age, and we were two of the young dudes that were fishing around Central Arizona, and we were fishing tournaments. You know, we both started fishing tournaments right around the same time. Sean had his mentor was a guy that I actually worked with my first job. His name was Butch. And I was working at a tracker dealership. He was one of the mechanics, and I was like washing boats over there. And dude, I did so much stupid stuff in front of Butch. Like, I'm the least mechanical person easily in this room, but like probably in all of fishing. Like, I can't, I thought it was going to be a great opportunity for me because, you know, I was like, I'll work there and I'll learn how to work on boats, you know, and they hired me at first to like detail boats, but then they ended up short a boat rigger. So they're like, oh, you can be a perfect boat rigger. You'll be an apprentice to
grab
this
screwdriver. You got this, bro.
Dude.
Not so much,
first day on the job, they were teaching me how to drive the forklift, and I freaking like dominoed like five boats on the forklift. They were trackers, thankfully, so they just bounced off of each other.
Yeah, perfect. But
I did that. This is all in like a 6-month period. Like, not long after that,
they said you have a face for sales and moved you over to the sales counter.
Dude, I was putting a cover on a pontoon boat. Like, and these pontoon boats have like the snap-on covers. Okay. So
it's kind of like buttoning a shirt. If you get them out of line, then
exactly. So it comes with the buttons that you screw into the side of the rub rail and the cover. So they're like, okay, well here, just put the buttons on, you know, measure it out.
Pretty should be straightforward, dude, right?
I had measured it off all like 2 inches off. So it had freaking like 50 extra screws into the rub rail. And I'm like, oh, it's okay. I've got a bunch of extra buttons. I'm just going to double it up. So I finished the job, dude, and there's like twice as many buttons as there should be on the side of this rubber, and I go in and tell our boss, and he loses his mind. He great guy, like, you know, I still talk to him to this day. We all know him, but he comes up and he starts having a panic attack, an anxiety attack. They ended up like they took all the big screws and buttons out and put like the smallest screws they could find, and they just told the customer who bought this brand new boat that was just part of the boat, like those little screws.
The design, right? Yeah. It's more aerodynamic. It allows the air to come in when you're going 30 miles an hour on your pontoon boat, right?
Oh yeah. But anyways, totally sidetracked there talking about those guys.
I have some similarities. I think we could probably have a pretty close tie for mechanical inabilities. And for me, obviously, I like cars so much that has taken me a long time to finally come to grips with. I'm more of the paid for, not built camp, because it's just slow and sloppy if it ever gets done, if you rely on me. And I've never even wanted to get near my boat because I felt like if I screwed that up, it'd probably sink. So I have empathy for you over there, man.
Yeah,
it didn't last.
I kind of started my fishing career out like you did, Josh. I started working at Tempe Marine washing boats, and I didn't do this, but one of the guys there did. It was hilarious. He put a compass, because obviously we didn't have GPSs and stuff. He drilled a big compass into the bottom of a boat and had a mounting bracket. Well, he used screws that were so long, it went through the hull into the bunk. So the dude goes to the lake to get his boat off the trailer and can't get his boat off the trailer.
It's screwed to the trailer.
Dang.
Try to explain that one.
That takes the cake, dude. That's
but at least
amazing.
The compass didn't blow off, right? It was, she was safe.
You imagine that trying to get his boat off the trailer, looking at all the straps and everything, and he's got a screw through his bunk.
And meanwhile, there's probably like 35 people honking at him on the ramp. Yeah. Like, what's your just problem, man? Get out of the way. Sorry,
hilarious,
I screwed my boat to the to the bunk. Anyone got a Phillips head I could borrow?
that'd be a dirty trick to do to someone, huh?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's great. How about you, dude? Like, what was your first job?
I actually worked at Mervyn's, believe it or not.
Nice.
Yep. That was the first job. My sister was the manager, and that didn't last too long. Worked in the shoe department, had no idea what I was doing. And then,
how old were you? Like 16, 18?
16. Yep. Still going to school, and ended up doing that. And then pretty much been fishing and got into the construction world there for a little bit. And it's been 5 years now. Actually, yeah, 4.5 years with Guiding now. And just kind of gambling that. I'm like a glorified bum.
No, you're not, dude. You're a hustler. You're a fishing hustler, dude.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of guiding, and we got a a delivery here. Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
The UPS guy has entered the cave.
That's cool. But yeah, you're a fishing hustler. You're fishing tournaments. You're guiding. You do some carpet work. You install carpet. So he kind of does it all, and I can appreciate that. That's if you're going to get into the fishing industry, it's kind of you got to hustle, man.
The big bucks don't just come falling out of the sky, right?
Yeah,
kinda
it's
grind it out.
Always been grinding on it, and just you know, trying to make it by, and still doing work on carpet. I mean, I've done yards, cleaning yards to make it to tournaments, and you name it.
Heck yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You're one big win away from, like, you know, getting to
fewer carpet jobs.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody needs that break, you know. Heck yeah, one good break to get you a good jump start on things, and you know, hopefully that'll come next year. Actually, I got a little deal signed up. I'm actually going to fish the Opens next year.
Oh heck yeah, dude!
So
right on.
Gonna dip my,
I didn't know
dip
that.
My feet
that's
in that
awesome,
one,
man.
And give it a shot, you know. Hopefully, end up in some Texas waters. And
so, are you saying this year or next year?
Next year, yeah.
So 2021.
2021, yeah.
Awesome.
And you know, Mitch, our buddy that was on here too, he's talking about traveling and going, and I think me and him are gonna link up on that one, and
that'd be great.
That'll be trouble, man. Traveling with Mitch.
Yeah, I already know.
Looking forward to those stories.
Yeah. Wheels coming off. Oh, getting there is always the process.
You bet it is, right? That's where all the fun happens.
Tell him he needs a new boat before you guys do that.
Yeah, no, again, that's a condition. And also, don't let him make you leave at like 9 p.m. He has whenever we did those, like, we'd be embarking on this like 20-hour road trip, and he'd want to start at like 9 p.m.
Do
you remember
that? Why?
Josh?
Who does that?
He's like, I can't remember his rationale, but it was
Sean,
horrible.
Sean, do you do that?
No. Okay. Mitch is the latest guy I know, 100%.
And he calls Nick.
I'm going to throw him under
croissant.
The bus for that.
Because I flake.
Yeah.
But it's also because he sets me up to flake, dude. And you know, it's funny, before kids, I was still an early to bed type of person, and I remember that. I think we were going to the Table Rock Open, and same thing. It's like we're going to meet at the Bass Pro parking lot at like 8 p.m. so we could caravan. And then not only was I unhappy about that, I drew first straw to drive. So I remember nodding off going, what is that? That'd be like east along the 260 outside of Payson, where you're kind of going through that mountainous stretch. And all the times I'd driven that, I had never seen an elk. And then that night, dude, I remember like I was driving Tommy's truck, and I was 65% asleep and 35% awake. And one of the heavy nodding off sessions, and when I looked up, there is a giant elk like inches off of our lane. And I stayed awake after that for like 45 more minutes before I started falling asleep again. But I remember
that'll wake you up.
Yeah, I thought I saw the imminent end coming. I was hoping the elk would go through the windshield at him, since he was making me drive, but it didn't end up working out that way. So don't let it leave at like 9 a.m., dude, like when you're strong. Or maybe
3
a.m. Yeah.
That's the time to leave.
Right. At least you got a little bit of sleep in you.
I've always been an early riser, but Mitch, man, even fishing the tournaments and stuff, I'd show up to his house ready to go, and I mean, nothing's ready. Nothing's good to go, you know? But
it's that party animal in him, man. He's a night owl.
He is.
It's an interesting hybrid of night owl and fisherman. It's not always a common thing, so.
Yeah, I ran into Sean on the water yesterday, and he was telling me about the fact that he's going to fish the Opens, and I mean, I don't know if I probably overreacted, but I was super excited for him. I think that's a great opportunity for you, and I think you'll do well.
Me too. Guaranteed he will.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to get into it, you know, and doing a lot less stuff around here, you know, just kind of saving my money for those Opens and, you know, give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it's important to fish local to groom yourself. But I think there's a time to quit and go fish regionals and bigger stuff too.
That's the ladder, right? Like
it is
the
ladder.
To, I mean, you know, get to that next level.
I really think it's important to fish around here because you learn how to compete. You learn. I mean, it's tough, man, to win in a local one day
and
tournament.
Wherever you're from, this goes across the country.
Correct,
it's universal.
But there's a point if you want to grow, you need to continue. You know, go out and do it and fish bigger stuff. So
yeah. I think we're fortunate too for the lakes that we do have with, you know, Saguaro is one of our grass lakes, and there's a lot to learn there, you know, especially when you get into these other lakes that have grass. You think, you know, Arizona's a desert lake, all rock. But, you know, Saguaro and Canyon, those lakes have a ton of grass in them. And I've learned just a lot from there that I think that's really going to apply across the country if, you know, start traveling and doing things like that. You know, you have to catch them anywhere between a foot down to 70, 80 feet of water out here. So,
yeah.
Got to be pretty diverse out here for that.
Yeah, and just the tough fishing makes you a tougher fisherman. So.
It does, yeah. It definitely gives you some patience out here.
Yeah. And guiding on top of it gives you patience.
That's what I was thinking, too. It's like the ability to stay cool when you've got somebody just like breathing down your neck and grilling you all the time. There's sometimes relief just from that element being removed, right?
Just one bite. That's all we need. Yeah. Just need you to get one bite.
Get this icebreaker.
They don't even need to be down your neck and you still feel the pressure.
The pressure, dude. It's terrible. And I have guided so much less than the three of you guys, but the times that I did, that was like my anxiety. It was just like, oh my gosh, if I don't get people on fish. And I remember, I'm always in a self-deprecating state, but I remember a lot of those trips doing just really stupid things and hoping that they wouldn't notice. I remember one time leaving my trolling motor down and trying to get up on Pat and just spraying like.
And you hope they didn't notice that?
That one I was like.
Come on, dude.
I'm getting soaked here.
Yeah. I don't notice anything. Nothing's going on.
Well, it just got windy all of a sudden, right? Oh, who would have thought the trolling motor's down?
What did you, do you remember what you said? Or you did you man up and say, that one's on me, guys?
So I did own that, and that was about the 34th thing I had owned that trip. But God is kind in the fact that those clients, they were an interesting, it was two brothers, and they were kind of like they were just your typical classic bros, right? You know what I mean? Like the bromance was there, and even they just had a funny dynamic. So I think they were going to have a great time. Even if I like had a heart attack and fell off the boat, they'd be like, well, that's okay. Like he wasn't that good anyways. We'll just keep it moving. So they were super patient. And then, you know, dumb luck, they caught a pretty good fish about halfway through. I think it was maybe like a 5.5 or 6 pounder, which don't you love it when a client catches a good one and they instantly throw the weight at you on how much it weighs?
Of course.
You go with it.
That's how big he is. How big did they say?
It was like pushing 9. And I was like, dude, I don't know. My scale's out of batteries, but that might be a double digit. Yeah, I don't know. Like,
let's underestimate that one a little bit.
Let's get another picture of it. Hold it closer for your family.
Do you have a scale?
No.
No, just put it in my hand. I can tell you. It's calibrated. I catch a lot of these. I had a guy at Canyon one time swim bait fishing tell me that. He was like, it was with Mitch. And stupid side story, so I'll make it fast. But Mitch caught his PB that day. It was at 11 pounder. And of course, we're in my boat, so zero preparedness. And so we idled over to a guy. We're like, hey, man, do you have a scale? And flat faced, that guy's like, just let me hold it. I'll tell you how much it weighs. And he was off.
What did he say?
Dude, he said called it a 7.
Of course he did. Oh, and it was like 11 plus.
Wow. Like 11.6 or something.
Dude,
like
that's
that.
Just
love
salty,
those guys.
That's pretty rough.
Salty
right there.
And jealous, too. It was like in the live well, and so he was already kind of big timing us. And then we pulled it out. We'll keep the innocent unnamed. He's not really innocent. The guilty unnamed. But everyone around here knows this character. And so the fish comes out of the live well. And his eyes just kind of like, you could tell he gets like a little twitch of like jealousy. And he's like, I can tell you that's a 7 pounder. And then sure enough, it was like an 11.5.
Way to just try to crush someone's dreams like that. That's
a story, bro.
What if you let it go?
How are you off by 4+ pounds?
Jealousy. Yeah.
Long days of swim baiting and not getting bit.
For real, right? Hallucinating.
You don't deserve this one. This is your first swim bait trip this year. Yeah. That's my fish.
Yeah. So that's probably why my guiding career lasted about as long as 15 minutes or so, but it's good to know that anyone coming here will land in your guys' capable hands and do better. Have you guys ever done anything that stupid, leaving a trolling motor down or doing something stupid in front of someone?
Of course we have. We just don't talk
about
it.
Yeah, you're just not brave enough to say it.
Nope, not us.
I got a pretty good one. I did, the fishing was pretty good one day over at Saguaro, and you know, everybody always talks about the sunscreen on your baits, how it messes it up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fishing was pretty good. They had, I mean, these people were just come in. They just flew in. They don't fish very much. I doused that thing in sunscreen. I mean, I put his worm. I mean, I just covered the plastic in sunscreen, right? And I'm like, you know what? He won't figure it out. Threw it out there. Ended up catching fish on it. So right then, I threw that whole theory right out the window.
You were literally doing it just to test it out.
Well, not even to sabotage. I wanted to test it for myself. Okay. I was like,
you know what? No clue.
No idea. So I'm sitting over there. I turned my back. I'm like, I'm gonna rub a little sunscreen on this one. You know?
What kind of sunscreen?
I don't even remember what it was.
Copper Tone 45.
Bait mate.
No, it was actually like the rub on. I mean, it was sunscreen. On there pretty thick, but yeah, I just wanted to. I was like, you know what? Fishing's pretty good. They've caught enough. You know, I'm going to see if this will actually work here.
Yeah, start.
And it did, man.
Experimenting.
It worked.
So, I was heard WD-40. I used to douse horse flies in WD-40 in my trout fishing days. And I don't know. But now it's good to know that between sunscreen and WD-40,
you're all right.
You're straight. Yeah.
Dude, in my experience with the Berkeley guys, you know, I've been with Berkeley for a long time, and their big thing is scent.
That's
and
what
everyone,
keeps them 45%.
Everyone, yeah, I mean, sunscreen. Dude, well, 45% more bites That's with power right. bait, for sure. Double that with max scent. Says Pitch here. But they talk about different, like, they know all about it because they've got a couple guys that on the scientific side have spent tens of years trying to figure this stuff out. They've got all the facilities to do it. And the WD-40 thing is, it's interesting. It's a myth. It is a myth. Long story short, it's a myth. I don't think it's going to hurt you at all, but it's one of those things that won't stay on your bait, to be honest.
Okay.
I mean, it's gone as soon as your bait hits the
water. Well, I do remember seeing a very suspicious looking, like rainbow prism looking film as soon as it hit the water. So that was it leaving.
It's gone.
You know, what's funny is this morning I did a guide trip at Saguaro and my client was from BC, Canada.
Okay.
And he told me they use WD-40 for salmon, trolling for salmon, and it's the oil slick that comes off of it.
They want that slick.
I guess. Kind of weird.
Yeah. I was just going to ask you about that. I was like, you know how like when you spray a little bit of bait scent in the water, you get that, you know, it almost looks like oil hit the water. Do they see that when that bait's going down, like there's a trail coming off of it, or do they actually get the scent?
We're going to have to call these guys in.
Yeah, get them on the
My buddy Mark
line.
Sexton up at Pure Fishing at Berkeley, man. He'd have the answer for that.
Do they see like a trail of it as it sinks, like an oil trail behind it, or is it just not there?
Wouldn't it be a sweet job? Are they hiring over there to spend tens of years analyzing that? That would be amazing.
Pretty cool. They've got tanks, and they've got these fish, and they just turn the fish constantly. Like some fish they'll study for a month, some fish they'll study for 6 months, but when it comes to like testing baits, the fish see the bait once. And that's it, because fish have, I mean, they've got memories, man. And whether it's they remember like we remember, they do have some type of memory. And
well, it would build some bias into it, right? So probably they're trying to keep things as neutral as possible, so you have to keep it fresh like that.
They have so much memory, they think a drop shot's actually a bait to eat.
Yeah.
They think it's actually
crazy,
a forage
huh?
in Saguaro, right?
Rob's just busting these myths right here.
But Rob has never been cynical, though. This is a new leaf that you're turning over here. Rob is a gullible guy.
That's hilarious. Well, dude, I don't know about – I probably – talked about a couple of the dumber things I've done on that last trip, you know, weather related stuff, pretty bad, but some of the sillier things that have happened on trips, a couple of things I wrote down. I had one client catch a 10 pounder. I've only had clients catch, this might be the only client that's ever caught a 10 pounder. He is the only client that's got a 10. His first bass of his life.
It was his first bass?
Bass of his life.
Ruined.
No kidding.
His father-in-law like forces him to come on this guide trip. You can tell he just didn't really want to fish. This guy in his 30s probably, and his father-in-law was like a outdoorsman, avid outdoorsman, and brings him out there. We're throwing spoons, flutter spoons, and I don't have a net in the boat. That is a dumb mistake on my end, throwing spoons without a net on a guide trip. But he hooks a dang 10-pounder on like in the first 20 minutes of fishing. And I'm trying to lip this thing on the side of the boat with a spoon dangling around. He has no control of the rod. Got it in. He's like, that's cool, but my uncle's caught bigger catfish than this. What do you bring for lunch?
You got any Twinkies in this boat?
Oh, man.
And that poor guy, hopefully he just doesn't like fishing that much. He continues to dislike it.
He probably forgot about it, dude. Yeah. Probably, you know, not a big deal.
That's like all those stories of people who go golfing in their first few times and they get like a hole in one, and then it's just like, whatever, just moving on. How many people have spent their whole lives? I still haven't caught a 10. I'm sure you guys have.
Something about that spoon, though, man. I mean, you guys caught a 10 on it. Ron had a guy, what was it, 2-3 years ago, catch a 10 on a spoon. I mean, there's been some big fish caught on spoons.
Yeah, and mine was in the summertime, kind of a crazy deal. I don't remember. Was Ron's like a jigging spoon type deal in the winter?
Yeah, I think it was a Castmaster, some half ounce, a smaller spoon too. So, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Large or small. But this was middle of winter.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's the wintertime. They're lazy and they're fat and they're all kind of doing the same thing. So, it was a freak deal, dude. Like, it was a freak deal. And for that guy to be so lucky to catch a 10 pounder as his first bass was crazy, dude. You briefly talked about a fish that a woman caught on a trip with you, dude. Let's hear about that one.
Yeah, that was the biggest fish I had. The lady actually caught it. We were fishing at our lake over here in Saguaro, and she was throwing a soft jerk bait, had it right to the tip of the rod, about to pull it out of the water in a nine. It was like probably 9.5, 9.75, ate it right off the tip of the rod. Took a ton of drag out. I thought for sure it might have been gone, but she ended up getting it in. But I mean, you're talking 2-3 inches off the tip of the rod.
What are the odds of that?
Unreal. Yeah.
And then all this. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
The thought, too, is like it's probably like a good thing that people, like, how many times that happens, the line breaks or something breaks, you don't catch that fish, and yet they do. It's just like your guy with a spoon, like no rod control, no net.
This doesn't happen in tournaments.
Dude, never
it does,
does
not
right?
happen in tournaments.
It's like, it's truly beginner's luck, but it's cool that it all comes together, right? Because, so was she excited? Like, did she at least appreciate it? Or
she was stoked. I mean, freaking out the whole nine. It was cool. It was a big battle to get it back, and she had a good time.
Did everyone scream when it hit on the side of the boat?
Oh, yeah.
It had been violent.
Yeah, it was almost like a topwater bite, and the fish almost hit the side of the boat. I mean, it was good.
And how long ago was that?
This is probably going back 3-4 years ago still, yeah.
That's incredible.
It's funny, the lake is pressured as Sawar, right? And then that fish just comes up right under the boat.
I've had nothing even that close come at the tip of my rod to come bite my bait like that. I mean, you know, a couple small ones here and there, but a 9-something, I mean, it's just unreal.
It's cool and fishy. I'm just going to talk over Josh today. That's going to be the theme for the episode.
We're not in a groove at all today, if you can't tell. Sometimes you have a good podcast, sometimes you're struggling.
And then we have a great one
today. We're struggling.
We're crushing this.
We apologize.
And I'll just talk over.
Hopefully
you
forgot what you're going to say so I can talk. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. So unfortunately for you, I'm going to take the next 10 minutes to tell this story. No, it's fun when fish eat at the boat, right? I haven't had as many times with bass, but many times trout fishing, like in a drift boat, a lot of times, like as you're stripping a streamer or something, most of the biggest trout I've ever caught are like right there. And it's funny because you're out of position and like you do this like weak, crappy trout set, and like most of the time you don't hook them, but it's so cool when something hits you right at the end.
It is.
It's just unexpected.
You can visually like remember that bite forever. You can see that big white bass mouth coming up and engulfing it. I mean, it happened to Boyd when we were fishing not that long ago. It was not a 9-pounder, but you know, he was stoked because he watched this thing come up and eat it at the side of the boat.
Yeah,
it's special. You do a lot of big bay fishing, Sean. How many have you caught? Very many big fish like close to the boat on glide baits and stuff like that? Because it's known for that.
It is known for that. And I think that has to do with your patience almost, right? You know, you get that glide bait out there, everybody throws it out there a mile, whether you're sinking it or just reeling it against the wall, and then you start paying attention to it closer to the boat, you start slowing your bait down. Why aren't you slowing it down when it's way out there, you know? So I think it has a lot to do with that. And I think they're also seeing it as a pinpoint. You know, they get close to the boat, and almost like there's a wall there or a piece of structure between you and the boat. They have to make that split decision. So
it's either now or never, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it has to do with that or if maybe when you get it close to the boat, you're starting to slow that bait down. You're paying attention to it more, giving them more time to eat it. So
expand on what you're talking about, how a fish is going to pin something up against something. Because there's a lot to that with the swim bait, right?
There is a lot to that, yeah. And, you know, it's the angles, you know, bringing it in from a certain direction. You know, you'll see guys that are throwing swim baits and they'll get behind a wall or behind a point and throw it out, I mean, 100 yards past the point and bringing it to it. That fish is already sitting right in front of you on that point. But it's all about the presentation and where it's coming from.
I mean, the way I look at it, a trout's a big bait, right? And a fish, I mean, they're not going to expend a ton of energy chasing it down. So they're going to get to where they're going to be able to push it up against a wall to eat it. Essentially like a cat chasing a mouse, right? Yep. Where they're going to push it to
a corner.
In open
water, they have no chance, dude. Or less of a chance for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They're smart, dude. Those big ones.
Yeah, and I think that's where it comes into the boat. You know, you got all these guys that get bit right at the boat. Huh. I think they see the boat. And they don't know if it's the wall. I mean, they're so dialed in. I mean, you get them, those big ones, they get so locked in on the bait. I mean, they don't know where they're at, you know what I mean? Especially when their fins are moving and all that. I think they see something right there. It's that split second between you and the boat that they're seeing.
Have you seen a huge decline in that bite in the last couple of years?
I have, and we were talking about the moods of fish. You know, same thing with the Alabama rig when it came out. I mean, you couldn't keep them off that thing, but why can't you get bit on it now? Not all the fish have not seen that thing in the lake.
Yeah, these 4-pounders now are like, they're only a few years old. Did mommy tell them?
I think they have training classes
crazy,
down there.
Dude.
Yeah, they're like they educate them from an early age.
It's crazy.
Yeah, some baits just go on forever, and some of them just get played out. So I don't know. Is it vibration they get used to? Is it, who knows, you know?
Profile, how obtuse something is. You're all right, like those big crazy things maybe. Yep.
They're evolving, man. The fish are evolving right in front of our eyes.
Faster than us.
We give them so much credit. It's crazy, huh?
They're a bunch of green
crazy.
Fish
they still
with
eat
little
a
tiny
and
brains.
Yep. Drop shot.
Yeah, they still do, no matter what. You're right. It's interesting when a fish gets totally dialed in on a bait like that. And it doesn't happen all the time. Like, there have been fish that follow you to the boat. I've had days, especially smallmouth fishing, where you'll have 20 fish follow your bait to the boat, but never have one take you to the boat. But, you know, the next day could be the opposite. And I remember a few specific instances over the years where a fish was like totally so locked in on the bait, you could have done a cannonball off the side of the boat and it still wouldn't have turned off of it. I was with Tommy one time throwing topwater, and we were fishing walking baits. And dude, he had a fish, a big one, in a tournament that followed his walking bait. It was like a pencil popper all the way to the boat. And he was walking it super slow. And he goes, look at that, look at that. And it's like a 5-pounder sitting underneath the bait, just darting, like really like
just following
fast.
It.
Every time it would walk, this fish would dart to the left and then dart to the right. And it had no idea that the boat was there, or it didn't care. And it absolutely just annihilated the bait right at the boat.
Oh,
I'll never forget it. Unbelievable.
Did you catch it?
Yeah.
Nice.
He did. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
cool. But yeah, because then you're kind of at a disadvantage then, right? Because that fish is probably going to pull drag, right? And you got a crappy
be ready
angle on it.
Oh,
yeah, like that's a disadvantage to
might
the
be smashing
baiting.
The spool on that one. Not yeah, even letting use the drag.
Get
no kidding.
Down. Yeah, yeah, no doubt on a bait caster.
Sean, so I've got a 2-part question. What's your go-to bait? What's your strength in a tournament? A technique, a bait? And the other one is, what is your strength guiding as far as what's the bite you want to have for clients? What do you think you can be most productive with?
Ooh, that's a good question. The spoon deal is, I think, probably the best thing for clients, right? I mean, it's a lot of vertical fishing.
Open the bail.
Yeah, open the bail, let that thing hit the bottom, right? But that's ideal for me. We've seen so many big fish get caught over the years on spoons, and there's not much wrong you can do with it. There's definitely a technique to throw in the spoon, but you get that thing around a school of fish and it's bouncing on the bottom, that could be a lot of fun with clients. And, you know, that's just a good time for that. As far as the bait that's probably helped me out is swim baits. In tournaments, man. I've had a couple good tournaments. It's one fish deal, you know what I mean? And I will give it that first hour and go do it. But it's also, I mean, it's probably burned me more than I've done good on it, you know what I mean? But there's been some good tournaments that I've done well in, or maybe won because of a swim bait. And just giving it that opportunity, you know, guys aren't going to really necessarily pick it up, but all of a sudden you start getting some nasty weather coming through, get that low light. I mean, that's going to be your time if you don't get it in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But
tell me what you mean by a swim bait. What's your, what type of swim bait?
I do like line throughs. I get more into the soft stuff with that. The line throughs seem like they get bit, and you can be pretty versatile with it. There's a lot of times I've sank it out in 40, 50 feet of water and pulled it off the bottom and caught them. You know, a lot of guys are going to throw them out, let them sink for maybe 10, 15 seconds, but I'm talking about getting it down in 40, 50 feet of water. And I think you're just covering so much of that water column, right? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And it could be time of year if it's pre-spawn when these fish are down there in 36 feet, or you got the ones pre-spawning in 15 feet and you're pulling it up over a point. There's so much room for opportunity there. You're not just targeting one depth zone.
Yeah.
That's interesting. And being able to pick it up at the right time and put it down at the right time is a huge skill set just in itself. Never mind knowing how to fish the bait effectively like you do, but it's so hard to know when to put it down
when it might happen yes. versus yeah. when that's, it might not,
and you'll never master it, right?
No.
But the reason you're doing well with it and you do so well in these tournaments is you're better than most at knowing when to do that, dude.
Yeah, but it's definitely, like you said, it's caught me and it's burned me big time a couple times. You get one bite on it and then next thing you know you got 4 or 5 hours into it.
Tons
and now
of
you're
confidence
like, I need a
burned.
limit. I got one fish in the boat. But I'd say probably my biggest time I throw it is you get that school of fish fired up, you're catching 2, 3, 4 pounders, whatever it is. That's the time. When you got them lit up, why not spend 10 minutes throwing that thing while you got that school fired up and get the one out of it? You already know you're going to catch the 2 and 3 pounders or whatever it is. Give it that 10 minutes while everything's fired up. Throw something big out there and try to get the one. But
yeah, that's an interesting take. That's cool.
Heck yeah.
You probably had some pretty exciting moments in tournaments then when like it just lines up and you catch a toad on that and it's got to just be like
it is pretty
happy
cool.
Dance time.
Yeah, I had one. We were fishing a Bass Nation deal over at Apache Lake, and I started off with a slide swimmer in the morning and I caught an 8-pounder. I was with Thomas Edward. You know him?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, I was with him, and he's like, I can't believe that. You know what I mean? I was like, I can't believe it either. You know, it just worked out.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Fishing was so tough that guys weren't catching a limit. But for some reason, I kept getting these follows and bites on this thing. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to throw this thing for the majority of the day. Ended up catching another one on it, and I lost one. I actually didn't lose it. Came up and nipped the bait. That fish was close to 10, though, ever at Apache, and Thomas saw it too. And he's like, man, that's a big one.
I had
only had two fish that trip and got third place and ended up getting big fish of the deal. So
you get the right one.
You didn't have a limit. Just two fish. Oh, dude, that's awesome.
I fished as a co-angler in one of the opens, and Josh probably remembers this story. And the guy that I fished behind, he was actually the first person I ever watched really throw big baits. And this was a handful of years back. And I remember he put a clinic on in front of me with a BBZ, a slow sink BBZ. And it was, I mean, I think he, you know, I don't know if he cracked 20 pounds, but he had a solid bag for the day after day one. And it was just like, it was fun watching him have that experience where like he pretty much saw every one of his eats. I remember vividly seeing a good sized smallie, probably like a 3.5 or 4 pound smallie, come off of a submerged brush pile. And that thing was just, you know, it was a slow sink. So it was so visual. And every time it twitched and it was like a submarine, man, it just came up out of the, that brush pile. And it's crazy. Like they just kissed it. Like you would think it'd be this savage, violent eat. And it like just came up and like ever so delicately just like hooked itself onto it. It's like, what the heck? And
then bam, it was test.
It was cool. That was one of the most exciting and entertaining days. I sucked, but I watched him have a big day.
Yeah, you took that bait back home and did really well with it for a while.
Yeah, that was an eye-opening, you know, learning opportunity. And yeah, I don't think he's probably what percentage of tournaments has he had that experience throwing big baits predominantly in? Probably 1%. But when you do line it up,
that's the deal.
Special stuff, right?
It's funny you said that about the tail deal. And remember I was telling you that one I had come up, it was like a 9 or 10 pounder at Apache, and it literally tasted the tail. And one of my roommates, Chase, that's probably who I fish with the most, him and Tommy, and he came home one day. This is when the slide swimmer and everything became a big deal. And he goes, man, these fish are coming up. And Sean, they're tasting the tail of this thing. And I was like, you're crazy, dude.
Tasting the tail.
You're crazy.
And like,
you know?
That's a t-shirt.
Yeah, no kidding.
We go out there, and sure enough, probably the second or third fish that comes up, it's nipping the tail. It's about 7-8 pounder. Nipping the tail of a swim bait. And I'm like,
it's like they know better. They're like, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. I did it.
Do you think they do it to freak it out and get it to like turn around head first and eat it?
That's actually a good assumption. Yeah, I don't know.
Because those fish that you're talking about, like they get hooked, right? So they don't have a chance to really do anything else with it. At that point, they get stung, so they can't complete the motion of, you know,
or
stunning
it. Do they
want
to see what it is, or?
That's a good question. Or just, yeah, making it, trying to make the wrong move, you know, that way it can turn itself around and they can get a good bite on it, or who knows?
Sean, and all the like those side swimmer fish you catch, the ratio of like violent attacks versus those type of eats, I would imagine in my personal experience, it was much more of the quiet, soft variety like that than it was just like a violent eruption. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. And it could be hard to tell too, because most of the time you're throwing big gear, heavy line, you know what I mean?
Tight.
Yeah. And especially if they eat it out farther away, it's like, when I do see them come up and get it, they're coming at it full force, but that last second's real slow. Just they grab it and then they slowly go down with it, you know, and then you set the hook. That's when everything
right,
goes
on.
Nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually kind of, yeah, like a slow deal. You don't really, I mean, I've had some really hard bites and all that, but those fish just come up and sometimes it's 100 miles an hour, but it's real slow. As soon as they grab it, they're just sitting there almost, mm-hmm. and then they just slowly go down with it.
Yeah, so I don't know. That's an interesting question that neither one of us know the answer to.
Yeah. What's interesting is, you know, we definitely know that fish like to eat big bait head first. Like how many big gizzard shad or trout or bluegill, catfish, have you ever seen in the mouth of a fish sticking out head first? See the tail. They always eat them head
first. That's a great
point.
Never
seen a head sticking out of the mouth of a bass before, just tails.
Well, and then, I mean, like on a bluegill, right? Like the spines go down so that they're not choking on it probably some strategy involved in it, you know, but at the end of the day they're just trying to get it right.
It's a good point. Yeah, they would die, dude, if they ate a bluegill backwards or a yellow bass or a white bass, you get stuck.
So I'm such a swim bait idiot. The BBZ is the hard trout, right?
Yeah, and I think exactly. So it's just got a wobble. Is it two joints in that bait, Sean?
It's got a couple. I think it's three.
Three joints. So it kind of has like a little snaky pattern.
Yeah, it's like
to
a snaky
it.
Deal.
My experience with that bait, I think I've caught a couple fish on it, but nothing spectacular. But I was at Apache guiding. This was 4 or 5 years ago. And I had a client that could not throw a bait caster. But I had the thing tied on, and he wanted to throw it. So I said, okay, I'll cast. You reel it in.
Nice.
He ended up catching 2 4-pound smallmouths on that. It was like Sean shaking his head, but it's so true. That stuff happens.
That's what it was good, though, man.
When it first came out, that was a special bait, wasn't it?
It was the deal, man. There was a couple tournaments there for probably 2-3 years. I mean, we strictly threw swim baits. Didn't have anything else on the deck, and you knew you were going to catch 5 of them, so why not do it, you
know?
But now they just got accustomed to it now, and it's definitely a different
deal. Was that
deal.
Primarily smallmouth?
Apache was both.
Both, yep. Yeah. What a great lake when that thing's alive and unreal. Well.
I had a guy throw a Lunker Punker on a spinning rod on a guide trip one time.
No, he didn't.
Oh, yeah. Like 5 times.
He brought it?
No, it was the same thing. He was curious. Like when I opened my rod locker, I had it tied up. And I was like, all right, dude, I let him.
You tied it on a spinning
rod? I let him
for
give it a shot. And I was like, this is not going to end well.
That's brutal, dude. That's hilarious.
Hey, man, it's what the client wants, right? Client's first mentality.
So how'd it end?
With him breaking it off and me punching him in the face. No, it didn't get that far. It de-escalated quickly when I realized how that was going to work out.
That's hilarious. And I will say, overall, with like swim bait fishing in general, the big baits, I think out west and certain parts of the southeast, this is a few years ahead of the rest of the country on that. Like, I've got a buddy that lives in like East Texas that is murdering big fish on all those lakes back there on big glide baits. The fish just haven't seen it out there like they have out here. The lakes are a little bit bigger. The fish are big, and there aren't as many guys. There are a lot of guys fishing, but they're not fishing like this. And these lakes that guys are doing it a lot out west in Arizona, California,
they're a little bit more educated at this point.
The lakes are a little smaller, and the guys have been doing it for 20 years.
Yeah, I think what happens now, too, these guys out here at least, or, you know, going back to the glide baits and all that, they've gotten so accustomed to it now. But what guys are doing are sinking these glide baits out in that 30, 40-foot range. And it brings you back to what happened when that 10XD come out. Those fish hadn't seen a crankbait that deep. Now you're putting a swim bait they haven't seen that deep.
Good,
and that was kind
happening.
Of a, yeah, some things were happening there, and that was kept quiet there for a little while, but it's out now. But you're risking a $200 bait on the bottom.
That's the first question. What do you do if you get it hung up? Yeah.
You hire a scuba diver.
Have you ever lost one, Sean?
I have. I actually got a pretty cool story with that. I snapped off one on a cast, and about 2 weeks later, I caught one on a 10XD, somebody else's.
Whoa.
Nice. You must have done something good for that karma to come back around. Did you help someone with a flat tire on the side of the road or something?
Probably something along that. But yeah. It was cool, man. I was like, yeah, I got somebody's fishing line or something. I pulled up a slide swim. I was like, telling my buddies, like, you get the net. That's some money there.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Pretty that's cool. Crazy. I ended up putting the new hooks on it. And I still use it to this day.
Nice. That thing's got some lucky slime on it for sure.
Wow. Have you guys ever caught anything else weird, like just on someone else's line? Have you ever caught a fish that was on someone else's line, like cast out and hook a line and bring in a fish?
I have not.
That's
no.
never happened to me, but I know what I caught that was weird, and I was in the back of the boat with you in Texas. Do you have anything weird, Sean, before
I
go off
on
this?
I did have a guy catch 2 pairs of sunglasses in one day, though.
Dang. Separate.
That's wacky, dude. Were either of them good?
No, both garbage.
Fay bands.
Yeah.
Josh, do you remember at Louisville on the jerk bait, I caught a diaper?
Oh, yeah, dude.
That was nice. Twitching a jerk bait, and it's like it just got weird, and it's like, I know it's not a fish, but you know,
was it full of Senkos?
Well, it was. It looked like it might have been full of Thai food. Now that you mention it, it was not cool, man. Got close, and it was like, yeah, it was an expensive jerk bait. I can't remember what it was, but it was worth. It wasn't worth just cutting off. I remember having to do a little battle with that, but that's far and away the worst thing I've ever caught unintentionally.
I remember that. It was icing on the cake. He had been waiting to catch bass all week, and then he caught like a couple drum, and then he caught that diaper, and he's like, just take me home.
I'm done. Screw this. Yeah. It's cold.
On that diaper note, dude, I was fishing the Classic in like 2016 at Grand and throwing a jerkbait. The water's ice cold. It's a jerkbait bite, and you guys know when the water's that cold and a fish eats a jerkbait, a lot of times it's just mushy, right? Mm-hmm. Even the fight can be like relatively mushy, and this is the second day of the tournament. I'm right mid-pack. I'm not having a super tournament, but I'm in line. After the first day, I was in like 12th place. And if I have a decent day, I'm making the cut. And the pressure's mounting. I'm not catching crap the second day, literally. I've got nothing. And it's like 1 o'clock. I've got like an hour or two left. and I just pull into this cut, and you know, sometimes you're totally by yourself, and then sometimes you get into like an area where there are spectator boats will come in and watch, the camera boat might come in, and it just so happened that I got like 10 boats around me in a tight little area, and like I'm just feeling the pressure big time. I need to catch a couple fish to make the cut. And I pull back on my jerk bait and it's heavy, and I fight this thing to the boat, and I mean, I'm playing it, dude, like an absolute idiot. And it is an old pair of underwear.
Oh, whitey tighties.
Yeah, just old, like huge, huge, nasty old underwear.
So big boy went around there on a jet ski 6 months earlier and took a digger and lost his underwear
with racing stripes.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's nice. Did you get like a photo gallery on Bassmaster? Well,
thankfully,
like that?
No. But I told it on stage, and the whole arena freaking erupted. It was hilarious. Yeah. Dude, that's the only good thing that happened all day. It was a good thing. I guess the best thing that happened to me all day, catching a pair of underwear.
I've heard Haynes fight pretty hard.
Yeah, you know? It did. It
Tuggies.
Did.
Yeah.
Tuggies. That's funny. You guys haven't, like, you've heard those stories. Someone, like, you know, hooking someone's line and you know, they catch a rod and there's a hook on a fish on the other end of the line. Like it maybe took someone's line,
pulled their rod
into the lake.
I would bet that happens all the time. Urban fishing. When you go to some of the urban ponds around here and there's just like the bank is lined with people that just set their rod down. I bet for the 2 days after those lakes get stocked and there's actually something in it, I bet the bottom of that lake is just full of dead fish hooked to like Zebco 33s. That's where like 2/3 of the stalker population go. They're just all laying rigor mortis on the bottom.
If they did drain, it's probably just a bundle of rods down there.
That's Walmart quite the visual.
Up, clean them up, and then just sell them again.
Everyone's got that story, dude, about how the rod got pulled into the lake.
Seriously, yeah. Right? Yeah. I remember, man, we're just tail spinning here. I was young, and my brother is 4 years older than me, and he is, however silly and nonsensical I am, he is very serious and like great guy, but serious. And growing up, he never missed a chance to beat on me. And so I remember there used to be this sporting goods store called Phoenix Sports in Ahwatukee. And like our big thing, I was probably in third grade, he was probably in seventh grade, somewhere in that range. And our big thing on Friday night is like we'd beg my mom or dad to take us there, and then we'd get like a sub sandwich after that, because then in the morning they were going to drop us off at one of the little urban ponds around us, and then they'd probably go get drunk or something, who knows. But my brother bought this like prized spinning rod and spinning reel combo, and it was one of those ones that already has line on it. I mean, we were young, we didn't know what we were doing, but like it was the holy grail, because above the butt section it had this like sweet paint job of a rainbow trout. And so he was so amped about this. So at that time, what we would do is we would go to these ponds and we'd just bring frozen corn and chum out frozen corn and then catch, you know, those big goldfish, koi. And so we were like the koi whisperers. We would catch these things and like take pictures of them. And we really thought we were on it. So I remember we chummed it up. We had it all going on. And those fish would actually tail a little bit. That's kind of cool about carp. They have like some saltwater DNA in them or something. And so you could tell when it was getting good. My brother walked off, who knows, he probably went to like relieve himself in the bushes or something, and he was like, whatever you do, watch my rod. So, you know me, man, I flipped the bail over, set it down, start daydreaming about, who knows, garbage trucks or something. And sure enough, man, I look over garbage and his trucks. Rod is like bouncing towards the shoreline, and it's like almost in, and I take off running, and splash, I jump in this
You
nasty,
jumped in the water for
oh,
it.
Dude, I went for it, didn't get it.
What did he do?
Oh, he was so mad, dude. He came back. He's like, I'm soaking wet, covered in mud. You know, those lakes are like toilet bowl water. So I like risked, who knows, syphilis or something. And they're going for this thing. Dude, he wailed on me. He still beat on me for losing.
He beat on you, dude?
Oh, dude, he thumped me. And I remember casting out trying to find it, and I never found it, dude. He only had that precious rod and reel for 12 hours, and I lost it. But it was so funny, man. That carp took it, and it was like bounce, 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 splash. So to all the listeners out there, make sure you have the bail open if you're going to set your rod down with bait on it.
It's a great lesson right there.
Better things happen.
Yeah, we talked about it on the last podcast, but the new version of that for bass boaters is the position lock trolling motors. talked about it a couple episodes ago. You never leave your rod in the water with your trolling motor on spot lock or position lock. Yeah, it's game over.
I had a rod leave the boat violently.
At 300 miles an hour.
Has that happened to you?
It's got me once.
Did it?
Yeah,
it got me once.
Yeah, it almost got the tip of the rod, too. I mean, when it goes quick.
Oh, yeah.
It's hilarious.
So, Sean, do you have more anxiety getting ready for a guide trip or a tournament?
Probably guide trips right now. It's tough out here, man. It is.
How about even when it's good? Just when you, the unknown.
Yeah, you just don't know who you're going to get. But, you know, most of the people we take out, I'd say probably all of them. I mean, they're all really good people. They're out there to have a good time. And it's just getting that first one out of the way, right? You know, you get that first one, it seems like all of a sudden they're talking to you and everybody lights up a little bit. It's a good time, though. I mean, but some tournaments coming up. Havasu, we talked about our weather out here. I think it's going to be in the 70s all week. I mean, we've seen them come up early as February. It could be a deal out there. The smallmouth could be looking up if it stays like this. But in theory, we usually get one more cold snap in February.
We always do.
Always one more.
Yep. We're not out of the woods yet.
Yeah, it makes you think like it's coming, but it ain't.
Yeah. I think March 1st is our target date for
99% of the time, sure.
It could go a week earlier, 2 weeks later, but March 1st. So, actually, I had that conversation with my son on the phone last night because he's fishing the urban lakes and wanted to know when they're going to start biting. So.
Oh, that's right. He's kind of doing some urban ninja fishing right now.
Every once in a while, he is. Yeah. He hadn't caught much.
Well, he's a busy kid.
Yeah, I'll get a text with a 12-inch bass every once in a while, which he's stoked. So it's cool.
I saw a meme recently, and you guys probably saw it, where like the guy
is it meme or meme?
I don't know.
They're calling it a meme on a podcast. I listened to as a joke.
I thought that was me. No, I'm not going to say that's a very inappropriate joke.
Okay,
perfect.
So this meme though is a guy's putting on like army like dark face paint, and it's like getting ready to go night fishing at the golf course, and he's putting like face camo on.
That's awesome, ninja. Dude. Yeah, it's coming. That's coming. Yeah. They'll be biting this summer.
Have you guys ever
fished
on a golf course?
Yes.
I love it.
Dude, those are magical places. I don't know what it is, man, but like, have you ever gotten on one of those?
Not once, dude.
Yeah, well, you have too much to lose, so you'd go down and
Oh, yeah, so much, dude.
Dude, I've got the spot for you this summer. It's got to be like 110, and it's game on every time.
Really?
Buzzbait action.
Wow. That's cool. Don't say it on air. I don't want anyone else to know.
Where my brother lost his beloved rainbow trout spin combo rod and reel was adjacent to like the greatest golf course fishing of our lives. And we were kind of going, trying to just be like the innocent and cute route because we were little. I had a bowl cut and buck teeth. So, I mean, how could you hate that? I remember this lady one time being, the house is backed up to it. She's like, we're going to call the cops on you. And
nasty.
Just went
just
nasty. And I was like, well, sweet, let me go to Ace Hardware and I'll buy some spray paint. And then later I'll come tag your garage door like most teenage kids right. do. I'm over here freaking throwing corn and catching carp, lady. Like, get off my back. But they don't mess around. That HOA do. You know, they pay their dues. There's no one going to be fishing in my pond.
Nothing better to do than to yell at a 10-year-old kid trying to catch a bass.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, go watch some TV.
That's probably my hardest thing about getting to a lake, especially fishing with Tommy and stuff. I mean, if we see a slice of water on the side of the road, the boat's, we're turning around, we're fishing it. And we've come across some really cool spots, man. There's one on the way to Havasu. I'm going to keep that
one on
the down low. But yeah, it's unreal. I mean, you'll show up 2-3 in the morning, you're hiking down there, you know, and fishing is just incredible. But I've stopped at some of the most random spots you could imagine. We've seen water, we've turned around, gone back 15 miles, and we're like, yeah, we should probably fish that.
Gotta give it a shot, dude.
He took me to one, and I definitely won't say where it's at, but dude, we tried to just go in. It's the middle of the day. We tried to go in and got kicked out instantly. So we went and reparked the truck and walked like 2 miles of desert. I don't know, maybe a mile of desert to get to it.
Just to make it look
probably
like you lived
been
nearby,
there
or
just to sneak in the back way, I guess. Dude.
Was it worth it?
We caught some fish. It was pretty fun. Yeah, yeah. The craziest one ever for me, dude, was fishing in a cemetery.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mark Pacella,
he's listening. He's our brother, dude.
Yeah.
But I felt he's got this cemetery where he lives. He's like, dude, let's go fish these ponds, man. They're awesome. This is in New York. So we go, and he's pulling into a cemetery. I'm like, and it's a nice cemetery, like a big one, dude. Super well maintained and stuff, and they've got these ponds, and there's, you know, no fishing signs
everywhere. The trick is to deflect your square bill off the mausoleum.
And the fishing was so ridiculously good, frog fishing. I mean, you could walked, I'm not exaggerating.
Did you have to dead stick it? No.
You could walk down to the water's edge and set your frog in the water, like not cast, and it would get eaten.
The toilet would flush on it.
People were just driving by staring at us and stuff. I just put my rod down and stood there for like 5 minutes and was like, he'd catch like three or four and I'd pick it back up and catch another one and like give it like a half, like a guilty half hook set and like reel it in real quick and let it go and then sit there for another 5 minutes.
Yeah, man. You know, and I had illusions. It'd be cool out here, you know, in the West. I know there's other people around the country that have the luxury of actually living on a sweet fishing lake. You know, out West, most of this stuff is public land that we're fishing, like our lakes, so you can't live on it. So we have a lot of these subdivisions with private water, and there's one here in Gilbert called the Islands. And growing up, there were times when the Islands was like known to be pretty freaking good. And so when Saguaro was good a handful of years back, I wanted to buy a house on the Islands, and I was going to just start like stocking, like, you know, that was back when 3 and 4 pounders were everywhere.
Be a bucket biologist, huh?
Man, you could build a brood stock of just awesomeness, but that never materialized. We went and looked at one of those houses, and those smell like Bigfoot's armpit, dude. Like, I don't know what it
the
is.
The lakes
but
do?
They smell bad. At least this one I went to is like July, August, it's hot. There's a big old dead catfish floating by, and you know they have aerators to turn the water over.
That water's blue now, isn't it?
Dude, like they're just trying to keep it.
That's like a summertime deal. They throw that blue in there for light penetration.
Kill the moss out of it, right?
Is there fish in there anymore? Because
it's been a long time since I've been over there, but back when it was good, man. I mean, you could throw a spook over those aerators, it was just unreal. You'd fish left and right, but
yeah, I knew a guy that actually stalked him. I mean,
wasn't there a baseball player or something that lived on the Islands once upon a time?
Yeah, and he would go to Canyon and Saguaro and load his boat and just like he was putting.
We
Christmas,
don't condone this, folks.
No,
yeah, it's frowned upon.
But he would put Christmas trees and cinder blocks and all kinds of structure out there. Yeah, he was living
large.
He built
his rootstock, but yeah. I was like back in the glory days. I caught a tilapia this time of year. You know, the tilapia get real sick because it's cold, and I would just foul hook those things, and I brought one home and I was like, this will be sweet, I'm gonna have it as a pet. And I just left it in a bucket with, like, you know, I'm a little kid, I didn't know, so no aeration or anything. I forgot about it, and like 3 weeks later I went and looked at that thing.
Later
oh dude, what was in my backyard? I forgot about it. Don't do that either. Yeah,
my dad would have killed me, dude.
Yeah, my parenting was a little bit more lax. Don't try that either, that doesn't end well.
It's hilarious. The good old days of fishing urban ponds. You know, that dude probably, that baseball player probably put all that work in. And the sad thing about those ponds is it's hard to for them to sustain. Like, they'll get wiped
Livable
out by
conditions.
Algae. It's just, it's not like a big deep lake or a river like that.
It's a concrete pool, right?
Yeah, dude.
6 feet deep and it's 120 degrees
it's
outside.
Brutal. Yeah.
It's conducive to fish biology.
Yeah. Well, that's fun stuff, man. Before we wrap this thing up, there's one last guiding topic that I meant to ask last time. Have you guys ever fished with like any celebrities, like any athletes or anything like that? Like, as guides, these people want guide trips, and that's always an interesting one, talking to guides around the country. You know, there's athletes that you didn't know like to fish, or, you know, it could be anyone, rock star, anything like that. You guys ever fished with anyone?
I fished with a guy
from the Phoenix Suns, right?
Yeah,
is that who
Luis,
you're thinking of?
Luis Scola.
Yep.
And the funny thing is like, it took me forever to get a hold of this guy. His wife set up the trip for his birthday, and obviously he's an NBA player, he's not going to just answer random numbers. So
right,
I finally get a hold of him. He spoke good English, but it was just a little broken. I mean, and I didn't know what I was getting into, because usually people that want to go on a fishing trip, they're all about taking your call, right? So I finally talked to him at like 8:30 that night, and I got his name, and it didn't mean anything to me. I just didn't follow NBA at that time. And I'm walking down the hallway, and I told my son, I said, I got this guy, Luis Scola. He plays for the Suns.
Wow.
Immediately. So Anyhow, once we got through all that difficult part of it, we got on the water, and he was just fantastic. That guy giggled every time he caught a fish. He's from
Argentina,
I think.
And that's a big fishing
country.
What
do they catch there? They catch...
Well, so they have a lot. They have their trout fishing game is on fire. I'm sure they have other stuff, but they're known for their trout fishing.
It wasn't trout. It was something similar to a bass, but he was just
Barramundi. No, I don't know.
Yeah, but no, he was.
So had fished some though.
He had fished. He could fish. He was just a pleasure to have on the boat, and And, you know, he told me his most enjoyable time playing basketball is when he was playing youth basketball and still is in contact with those kids that he played with and was all about his family. Just everything.
Great guy.
Everything exactly opposite of what a lot of professional athletes are like. So, yeah. And then another opportunity I had was I took three Los Angeles Angels players. Mike Socha was the manager at that time, and he was during spring training, and he gave them an assignment to go fishing to get closer, right?
Hmm.
One of them was Brooks Pounders was his name, and Cam Bedrosian. Cam Bedrosian was the closer for the Angels for a while, and then a catcher. I can't remember the catcher's name. But they went to Bass Pro Shops the night before. An older guy on the team had to fund their trip, right? So they go to Bass Pro Shops, they buy all this gear, they show up in matching jerseys.
Nice.
Like bucket hats.
Did they get spinning rods with rainbow trouts painted on them?
They, that's a darn great near. Seller. No, they had Shimano, they had the CI4, the Stratix. They went all. Large, dude. They spent they spent like $2,000 at Bass Pro Shops. It wasn't their money, right?
Yeah.
And so anyhow, they show up and we go fishing. They caught a few small fish. All they needed was a photo and they were out of there. They had stuff going on and but they had they were a lot of fun to be with too. Super nice guys. So
that's cool, man. How about you, Sean?
I took out Dave Tippett, legendary hockey coach.
Yeah.
The first trip we actually had was a tough one though, man. And that was when like some pressure was on. You know, I'm like, I get one guy that's, you know, that means a lot. And the first trip we had was tough, but really cool guy. Ended up catching one good one. And I think I sent you a picture of the...
He caught a toad, dude. Yeah. I had texted Sean that day because I was out there and I'm like, dude, I just haven't caught... I've been catching a bunch of three-pounders, but I just haven't caught a big one. I said the water was down today and the big fish didn't like it. And then he sends me a picture of this tank and he's like, this one liked the low water today.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. He caught two of them that day, and ever since then, I think, you know, I took him out another time after that, and, you know, just that confidence booster after you get a couple under there, but, yeah, it was a fun time with that guy.
That's cool. Right on. Yeah, I'm a big hockey fan, dude, so super familiar with him. But you didn't talk much hockey when you're out there, right?
No, not too much hockey. He's actually kind of a quiet guy, but real fun to be around, and actually a good fisherman, too.
Right on. Yeah, he's known as kind of like an old-school coach as far as, you know, in the hockey world.
Definitely
for sure.
Tell, yeah, you don't want to be on his bad side.
He doesn't put up with much crap. Like, no. I heard him in an interview. He was talking recently about playing in back-to-back games. Like, his team had, like, a back-to-back game. Normally, they get a day off in between. And he, just to shut that media guy up, he's like, oh, yeah, it's really rough, you know, flying private after the game. And then we get to a five-star hotel and – eat all that five-star food and then have to get up the next morning. It's really tough on these new guys. Back in the day, they used to fly commercial and like it was a lot different, you know, just getting from place to place was a lot tougher. So
it's really funny listening to the old school hockey guys. They all have that same thought that the young guys have it too easy.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yep. Probably yep. How things most things are in life for sure. But I'd say probably the one that stands out the most to me was I took out Jordan Sparks, who I had no idea who it was when the trip booked, and the guy booking the trip is like, hey, yeah, just so you know, this is a Jordan Sparks going to be going with you tomorrow with her grandpa. And I was like, who's that? And he's like, she won American Idol 2 years ago. I'm like, oh, dang, right on. That's cool. So we fished and she was awesome, dude. So just great, great lady. She was pretty young at the time, maybe like 20 at the time. She was just about to go touring with the president on like with President Obama on, you know, something he was doing. She's going to be on the road for like a month doing events with him and stuff. I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. But she loved fishing and they're great, great people. Fish with a couple athletes too. And that's a lot of baseball players like to fish. A lot of hockey players like to fish. I fished with a football player too, a lineman from the Cardinals back in the day. And I remember he rolled up in like a 15-year-old Tahoe. I was like, wow, this guy. And he was just a super, super down-to-earth, you know, just a cool dude.
How about the story about the pitcher you had out and his brother was borrowing his jacket? I wouldn't say his name.
Oh, yeah. Dude, that was a good one. I will. I'll leave his name off because I hadn't said it yet. But a pitcher, he was pitching, I think he was pitching for the A's at the time. He's had a good career, made a couple All-Star games. He's still in the league, pitched for at least 10 years. His brother, he had just signed a huge contract, and he's with his brother and his dad, and his brother is wearing like his jacket, and he just pulls out a fat wad of cash. You know, he's like, oh, look, I just found $2,000 in the pocket. And
he just lost $2,000 in his jacket.
Yeah,
he
had been worn it out on the town like the night before. And he just takes his finger. He's like, no, give that back right here. That's mine. That's funny. You reminded me of that one. But good times, man. Well, right on. We're a little over an hour here. Sean, any last words? Anyone you want to thank? Any sponsors or anything like that before we cut this off?
Yeah, you know, Versatech Solutions, Taipan Rods, Arizona Custom Baits, and you guys, man. I really appreciate it. It was a good time hanging out and talking some fishing stories.
Cool. It was good to have you, man. We'll have you again, and we've got a bunch of other guiding stories we never even got to. We got sidetracked with some actual good fishing stuff, so we'll have to have you back again, man. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast, guys. Sean was a great guest. He had some great insights on big bait fishing, and we really enjoyed talking to him. We say it every time, and we're not about to stop. Thanks for the shares, the ratings, and reviews. They're a big deal to us, and we appreciate every single one of them. We hope you guys had a great week, and we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks.